Into sports.
20 yards out, Hurst to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him. Yeah, no.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Brian O'Driscoll on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
Now we are looking back on round three of the Guinness Six Nations. Curtailed, of course, no France, Scotland, and there is plenty of anger over in France about the brewing situation there. Ireland winners in Rome, extraordinary game at the Principality. The net result of everything is that Wales will play Italy in round four and then presumably have a crack at a Grand Slam on March 20th in Paris. Nobody, Brian O'Driscoll, you're very welcome, was predicting that.
No, they certainly weren't, Joe. It's amazing, really. You know, you have to take your hat off to Wales. They just find a way to just keep themselves in the point, in the game, in the tournament. And then all of a sudden, in the first two games where they could so easily have been 0-2, they've managed to win the two. Never difficult for them to get themselves up for a game against England in the Principality. And then odds on, well, they're going to be in, you know, Stade de France with a Grand Slam at stake. And we don't know, obviously, what's going to come of, you know, the French Minister for Sport is making all sorts of threats with what's gone on within the French camp to, you know, to pull them from the circumstances in which they find themselves in. So, it's really amazing because all of a sudden, after the weekend's performance with Wales, they looked like a good Welsh team, but this was not a good Welsh team in round one and a little bit better in round two. But they needed moments of magic to get them out of a hole. But now it looked like a much more competent performance against England. And yeah, they'll be absolutely full of confidence going over to Paris for another shot of the slam. It's really amazing.
Well, listen, I'm sure Gilroy and Sheehan will pitch in a few days. They have no chance, and then it'll be a glorious Grand Slam. 2 and 3 years, my God.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to their quotes being extracted as Alan Wynne-Jones lifts his fourth Grand Slam trophy, worst Welsh team ever, or something to that effect in the weeks leading up to the Six Nations. But, you know, there is something to be envious about, no doubt. There really is about their ability just to rate themselves sometimes higher than they should do at particular times. And that we've seen great Welsh teams and they've had success, but we've seen not great Welsh teams vying for success on regular occasions, yeah, which is a really great thing to say about the mindset of the group and how they're able to pull it all together. And on top of that, when their provincial, their regional teams are doing so poorly, to still be able to collectively pull it together from a national perspective is inspiring.
Well, I mean, geez, we'd love a bit of that. I mean, you look at the regions, if you look at the regions, overachieve spectacularly at World Cups. They win how many Grand Slams? I mean, we come along if we're lucky, decade at the moment to nick a Grand Slam. World Cups, we're struggling for whatever reason. But there's something about their DNA. Maybe they just buy into their own hype. I think Warren Gatland, when he was on with us last year, kind of acknowledged there's a degree of, not resentment, but a degree of looking at the Irish provinces and how everything is set up so brilliantly, and it's not the case in the regions. And so when they get into that Welsh shirt, they kind of think, well, we'll show everyone now. There's various things brewing there, but the net result is they do overachieve at times.
Yeah, we've got it in reverse. You know, our provinces are very successful. You think about the amount of European Cups that we've won, you know, domestically nearly every year, every other year, an Irish team is winning the Pro 14. But yet it doesn't quite translate into the consistent performance that we see with Wales over the last 10 or 15 years. And, you know, they've been in three World Cup semi-finals and us in none. And they, you know, look, we've got three Grand Slams to our name, and they've got three in the last 8 or 9 years. So, yeah, whether you love them or loathe them, you have to acknowledge and appreciate what they've managed to do when their backs are against the wall. The other thing as well is PVAC had lost like 7 of the opening 10 games. Yeah. They were calling for his head.
He was
and
gone.
Now all of a sudden is like he's the new savior. So it's funny how quickly you can turn around and no better team to do it when their backs are to the wall, they do deliver.
Yeah, well, it was a hell of a game on Saturday. We'll come to that in a moment in a bit more depth. Italy 10, Ireland 48. 6 tries in Rome. I mean, you think back to last time in Rome in 2019, it was stodgy. Alarm bells were starting to ring then. So, you know, we can dismiss Italy, and I think that's probably part of the conversation as not being very good. But if you're not going well, you can make hard work of those afternoons in Rome. What did you make of it?
I thought, in this order, Ireland were very, very good, and secondly, Italy were disappointing. And I think it's important to stress that, because I do think that irrespective of the opposition, if Ireland had played with that same sort of intent, with the same sort of clinical nature that they did show, even though they left some scores out there, I think they would have performed well against a lot of teams in the Six Nations, even the best sides. They'd have been in the hunt against England and France and Wales, no doubt. They had good access into the game, because I just think Italy, as much as they've performed okay in the first couple of games, even though they shipped a lot of points and it looks as though they're emerging and developing as a young team going forward, they were a disappointment. They fell off tackles. They just lacked a bit of organization. Their defensive setup got narrow at times. They kicked very poorly. So all of those things added to us having a better afternoon. But I thought we took our opportunities, particularly in the first half, extremely well. Some really great individual performances, some great moments. I thought Johnny Sexton had one of his best games in an Irish jersey for a very, very long time. And that's without, besides kicking his goals, I think we take that for granted. You hope your 10 or your kicker's going to kick the majority of his goals. Take that aside, I thought his shot selection, pulling the trigger on certain plays, the quality of his passing, kicking when needed, just he got the balance, and he it felt like he was a conductor of an orchestra out there, and he facilitated others to really shine as well. And I think that's the new Johnny Sexton. He's not going to be the X factor player himself. He'll have moments of brilliance, but it's going to be how he's able to draw it out of other players. And I think he silenced the critics with that. Yes, it is Italy, okay, and you have to do that against Scotland, got to do that against England, but he is, we've been waxing lyrical about him, why he's still very much number one. And I think that really showcases that pass to Keith Earls at the end. It seems simple. Not every 10 throws that. They really don't. Like Geraldine O'Driscoll would have been able to run that one in on down the touchline. But to still be able to catch path, throw at speed and look at the shoulders of the Italian winger and identify that's where the space was, that's a unique skill. And there's not many 10s around that are capable of finding that pass more often than not.
I know, we're rushing him out the door. We've got to be careful.
We are rushing him out the door. That's the other thing as well.
Yeah.
Like, the only reason that I'm mindful of him is because I'd be worried about his body holding up. There's no doubt Johnny Sexton's mind and head and physical capabilities are still great. But when you get into 36, 37, 38, you're going to have calf issues, you're going to have quad issues, you're going to have hamstring issues. And I think an over-reliance on that would be massively unhealthy. And it's for those reasons that I think we have to look elsewhere and have a really good, support role in coming through. And thankfully with Joey Carberry coming back, all of a sudden it doesn't seem so tragic anymore. I do feel that Johnny Sexton no doubt has the capabilities of playing in the World Cup in a couple of years' time if he can just control things. By the way, his defense, like we take that for granted, his defense is remarkable for an international 10. Really is. I hate that he still hits high and we've talked about him encouraging those occasional head collisions and stuff. He's not going to change that technique now, but his willingness to get stuck in and want it to be as impressive a part to his game as everything else, I was really, really impressed with his overall performance. And I sent him a text today saying I thought it was one of your best individual performances for a long time.
Did you write back?
No. Never does.
It doesn't anymore. We're done.
Blue tick, blue ticks.
Terrible signal here in Rat Mines.
He's like, go tell off the ball about it, why don't you?
Do you know what? It's funny. Every time he you know, he has a go at the meter or whatever, I really take it personally as if it's a slur on me. But it's what drives him on. He loves that chirpiness. He loves to feel the chip on the shoulder and that you guys have been on our case and we've stayed tight. And it's what kind of motors him and what fuels him to actually be able to deliver. If we were all nice and placid and, you know, well done, you're doing terrifically, I think he'd have to go and try and find it from somewhere else, whereas this is actually his fuel.
It is amazing the extent to which those 17 minutes against Cardiff for Joey Carberry have just taken the urgency and the heat out of our conversation around 10 now. Because what seemed to be happening over the last while is there was no great answer to the question, who is next in? So, I mean, do we need to pluck Harry Byrne and get him to jump a few rungs on the ladder? Do we bring back in Jack Cardy? And then there was serious pressure to give those players game time. And in the midst of it all, it's like, well, we've got to get Johnny out because we've 23 games till the World Cup. So suddenly, if Carberry is back in, let's let him settle into life at Munster and start playing well again and come back into the Irish squad whenever it suits and reclaim his rightful place. That takes the urgency out of this. Like, what are we going to do at 10? And now there's a bit of space for Sexton to, you know what, actually, if you're playing well, go out and go and play well again.
I think it also gives us an opportunity with less pressure on one of those younger lads to cap them before their time. And now I've been banging the Harry Byrne drum, you know, for a while, and that's almost, it felt a little bit panicky from my perspective too, because I was worried about the gulf and that we need to get game time and so on. And maybe it is a bit before his time. He was okay against Dragons without being, you know, spectacular. But what it does do is with Joey coming back in and back playing, it takes the focus off the desperation that we need to find an answer to Johnny Sexton. Plus, Johnny Sexton continuing to play well at the weekend. It's all a bit, okay, let's all just mellow a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, the problem hasn't ultimately gone away because Johnny Sexton's still not getting any younger, but it's just the pressure valve has been released a little bit on the necessity to do it here and now, and we got to find that replacement, because it feels as though we've got multiple fits now, depending on you know what happens over the course of the next 12 months.
So you said it Saturday, and in this order, one, Ireland were very, very good, and Italy most certainly were not. So it begs the question, the things we saw that even, you know, jump out to me, be it the offloads or the more aggressive attitude on the ball or the running lines and Hugo Keenan's try or Gibson Park taking a tap and go a few times, let's inject some pace and just see what happens. All of that, you know, it feels like what we've been crying out for. Is that reserved for Italy or do we see that at Murrayfield?
I know, I think you've got to play with a high tempo against Scotland as well. I think that's where part of the issue. We were kind of in third gear an awful lot in the first couple of games. It didn't feel as though we ramped it up. And I think that stuff of injecting pace, and Gibson Park got turned over on one of those taps and goes, geez, you know, the last thing we can do is berate him because he's trying to bring something new to the setup. Those things are going to happen. We have to be able to roll with the punches when it does. But you know what you will get from the positivity around sparking creativity in everybody else as well, the realization that sometimes we play off script and that's comfortable to us as well. I thought we went off script a little bit more at the weekend. We were allowed to, but it felt a little bit more. That some of the running lines from Hugo Keenan were beautiful. On the Keenan try, the break from Gibson Park after the, you know, the mauled line out where he drew the first defender, gave to Sexton, drew the winger, gave it to Larmer. Then Larmer didn't throw the offload when it looked as though it was a 50-50. Great decision, recycle possession. And then we got a magic offload and a great line from Keenan. All of those aspects. And also, even there's one other really small detail. When it went to the pod to James Ryan and then out the back to Sexton, the hands up, simple hands up from Henderson. If you watch the defensive line, two of them have a look in at him. And the knock-on effect is it just that the rest of the defensive line lacks security. Mm. They have a little turn in, and that's hundredths of a second, but that is the difference between scoring tries at international level and not, and having the security of being able to push out or make a dominant hit. There's one other one for the ring rose try, Sexton's deception of putting his hands up as the ball ran, you know, was thrown across him. That holds Kana for 200s of 300s of a second. That's the difference between a positive impact and him, you know, a scrag tackle where Ringrose gets over the line. So all those little 1 and 2 percenters went our way this time round because of the small efforts, the work done off the ball, where, you know, only coaches will be thankful for it. But if you kind of go through it forensically, there was so much good stuff, selfless stuff, where players are doing it for the betterment of the team rather than just for themselves.
So a few things to ask you about. Tadhg Burn at 6, Connors at 7, Standard 8. Obviously, there are plenty of names floating around behind them. We're hoping Dan Levy's back soon. There's Josh van der Fleer. There's a O'Mahony suspension coming to an end. Caelan Doris, yeah, of course. Rhys Ruddock, Jack Conan was on the bench. Ryan Baird was involved off the bench. But is that, you know, people are talking about the balance of that back row. Is that 6, 7, 8? Is that like, geez, they've played themselves into Murrayfield territory?
Yeah, I think it's very hard to select another back row now when they've played that well together. But, you know, it's one thing being tested in Rome. It's another thing being tested against Watson, Ritchie and Fagerson. That, you know, that's a pretty juicy back row. There's talk of Watson and Ritchie potentially going on the Lions tour. Both of them have been very good. Watson was, for me, man of the match in Twickenham. He was everywhere. So what happened with Connors was he'd a very good international debut against Italy and then was a little bit anonymous over in Paris a week or two later. And I think, you know, we have to be a bit mindful when we laud, you know, his great performance, and he tackled brilliantly and that chop is so effective. And then he obviously got a couple of tries, but his link play of being able to identify when to keep the ball alive as well. I thought he'd a very all-round, you know, very good all-round performance. But the big test is against much better back rows. I thought the Italian back row was anonymous, absolutely anonymous. Other than, you know, the try that was at Mayer scored, you barely heard them mentioned, and they made very little impact. Our back row was very impressive. Stander, another great game. Tadhg Burn, man of the match. His involvement. I looked. Rory O'Connor had something about the amount of rooks that he hit. Was phenomenal. So that's all unseen work. Or unappreciated work, whereas teammates would be like, that's an engine. And there's always question marks around Tadhg Burn as to his capacity to stay the course for a game. Kind of dipped in and out and had those magical moments, but then he might be anonymous for 10 minutes. That's definitely not the case with the new Tadhg Burn. It does feel as though he's an all-action player on both sides of the ball. So very exciting. And it's difficult to drop a guy when you've had a convincing victory like that for the next game. You kind of earn the right to get another opportunity until you know you fail or you don't meet the coach's expectations. So I would anticipate that the back row will certainly remain the same.
And if Conor Murray's back fit, has Gibson Park earned the right?
Definitely. I thought he played really well. On second viewing, you know, defending the edge, tackled well, marshaled things well. I think his pass looked, you know, almost ordinary maybe because of Craig Casey's when he came on. But the rest of Gibson Park's game, I think he's a very sharp footballer. And I think definitely it's very difficult to drop either him or Casey. And I thought Casey was brilliant for his 16 or 17 minutes. Loads of energy. The speed of the service was Stringer-esque. It was. I haven't seen a quality of pass at international level in Ireland since Peter Stringer, you know, the quality that Casey was throwing out. So I think it'll be difficult to parachute Conor Murray back in there, fit or not, because the two lads have really impressed. And now it's an opportunity, because we're not going to be winning the Six Nations, opportunity to find out what they're made of in more difficult fixtures like in Murrayfield and at home to England. We know what Conor Murray can do. So maybe this is a chance to reward players that have done well, but also have a look as to what their capabilities are in kind of tougher outings.
So Craig Casey seems to be making an impact on everybody. I mean, you have to go a long way now to find an Irish international who doesn't have a photo with him as a baby for a start. I mean, there'll be one of you somewhere down the line. Johnny Sexton likened his attitude to Johnny Wilkinson. Now, Sexton said, look, I don't know Wilkinson, but based on everything I've heard about Wilkinson, he said, I haven't come across anyone like him in the post-match press conference. And he prides himself, Sexton, on being the last off the pitch. that's not the case anymore. It's Casey. And I, you know, it stuck in my head at the start of the championship, Keith Earls was asked about his inclusion in the squad. And there was just something about the way Earls said, oh, I've no worries about him. Trust me, everyone, no worries about him. 21 years of age, does a mean careless whisper in the dressing room afterwards. Like, yeah. So this, we're entitled to be a bit excited about the future here.
I think we really are. Genuinely, I guess I'd seen bits of him, you know, for Munster. And when you're playing second fiddle to Conor Murray, you don't get to play in the, you know, you don't get to start in a lot of the big games. But does it feel closer to a passing of the guard, or, you know, to moving on to you know, the future, what you know, the next 5-10 years going to look like? It does feel like that. It does feel a bit transitional now, because he was able to deliver when it was put to him. I appreciate, again, it's Italy. The game was won. They were out on their feet. But what he brings, a high energy, high tempo, bullet pass, there's a narkiness about him, happy to carry the ball into contact, even though his frame would suggest he shouldn't. I think there's a courage there. There's obviously a belief, and there's clearly this huge work ethic as well to get better. And if you're being compared to Johnny Wilkinson, you know, I'm aware of his work ethic. He had an insatiable appetite for work. He was almost to a detriment, but to have that at 21 years of age is really great. And if you can marry that with the skill set that's clear for everyone to see, I think we've got a real treat on our hands in the coming years, because I think he can inject something that we haven't had for a while. It's a very different type of scrum half. And whether he's on the bench or starting, it's nice to have contrasts in your nine sometimes. Someone that's soothing and, you know, capable of what Conor Murray's done for years, but then someone to come on and do what Jameson Gibson Park does, but it almost feels like Casey brings it to the next level. I watched him a couple of weeks ago for Munster. He got subbed off the 75th minute and he sprinted off and I was laughing. You know, it's a real, that's a bit of a sign to the coach that, you know, this is what you get from me. I am an all action player, 75 minutes, no problem. I am fit as a fiddle. So those small little things that just sometimes stay with you. And yeah, I'm really excited about him. I'm excited to see Coombs in the coming months as well. And it feels all of a sudden that transition of some of those younger guys, Doris, Baird, these guys start to come through. Keller just starting to step up a little bit at the weekend, but maybe it is time to move on from some of the tries and tested.
Yeah, no, it's suddenly a bit exciting and a bit rosier, isn't it? Way back when, was singing a song in the dressing room after your debut a thing you had to do, no?
No, that must be Johnny's captaincy. No. You had to, usually sang on the bus. Maybe you're not allowed to sing on the bus with masks anymore. Who knows? But I'd never seen that before. Okay. So it was, it was good rendition. It was only a shame that I think they were so surprised at the initial few bars that, you know, he got a roar and he was thrown off his, off his lyrics, but he managed to pull it back and did a very impressive job. It sounds like there's some voice training in there somewhere.
It was like an X Factor where someone you're not expecting blows you away. I mean, it was, wow, I was like
they
Simon Cowell.
They just told you a sob story and then they deliver that.
It's my debut. I've never sung before. Who was the traitor filming it and leaking it? That's not a fan.
I got that in a WhatsApp. So a couple of hours afterwards. So from like someone disconnected, so I don't know where it went. Okay. But that's good. Here, it's only done great things for him. What? He's like, oh no, lad, stop. Don't be embarrassing me. Okay, getting out to the masses.
A quick word on Keller, and then we'll talk Wales, England. So I just jumped out to me, you know, nice little hands in the build-up to the Will Connors first try, you know, getting involved and doing that, and he seems to be all action. I have heard there are concerns over his line-out throws. They looked okay on Saturday, so he's got to be really close now on Rob Herring's tail.
Yeah, I think he is. Do you know what? I thought the front row looked really impressive. The ball carrying was it looked different than previous front rows. I think Furlong being back, we'd almost forgotten what he delivered. Besides being a great scrummager, his ball handling is phenomenal. the lead up to the Ringrose try, actually, you know, I talked about that deception of the ball in behind Furlong, who squared things up and then in behind to Kelleher and then sidestepped and got in behind. It was just before Henderson's no try, which was obviously outrageous too. The lead up to that, it's gaining an extra 2 meters because of those little, you know, plus plays and minus plays off nine. They're the difference between manipulating defenses and running into brick walls. And it's great to see that happening as well. And it wasn't perfect. You know, Furlong almost overran his role, but then the square up at the end, you know, and you see two players biting and you're going, geez, finally, some of this training is coming to fruition. Mm. So those sort of moments are great, and little tip-ons and just not having one-out runners. I think the days of one-out runners, we're not a physically imposing enough side to be able to be that attritional. We've got to think our way around a little bit more. So there was so much good stuff. I thought Kilcoyne, I looked at some of the stats. All of the pack except for Kilcoyne carried at least 5 times. So to share that workload, we usually rely on, you know, standard to carry 11, 12 times or 15 times if there aren't other ball carriers. But to have everyone do it at least 5 times is testament to their ability to get over the gain line. And think about, you know, I think David Kilcoyne only carried twice, but he's an explosive ball carrier. So you're not afraid to give it to him as well. I thought he had a very good 50 minutes, just looked as though he added an extra dimension. Obviously he had a big scrum penalty. I'm not, you know, trying to sign off Keane Healy yet, but it just felt as though, the, you know, he deserved his chance, and hope that injury isn't too bad.
Mm, okay. To round all of that off then, and not to put you on the spot overly, but, you know, it's a Lions year, maybe not. It seems like there's quite a few individuals playing pretty well. You know, Robbie Henshaw winning his 50th cap has been in fine form of late. Are we kind of maybe feeling a touch more optimistic? We might have a few fellas knocking on the Lions door starting 15.
Starting 15, I don't know if after Italy is the right time to decide that.
Okay,
that is
fair
the case,
point.
You know. You know, if you'd asked that after either of the first two games, you would have said no. And after the third, we've got 7 starters. So you can't look at it that way. I think you've got to look back at the overall games, and usually in a Six Nations game, you discount the Italian performance and you see how you've done in the other 4 games. They're the litmus
Marcus.
Test.
Yeah.
So I'll reserve judgment until we go to Murrayfield, which is going to be a more difficult place this time around than it has been for quite some time. I think they've got their tails up, and they've looked as though they've got, obviously, a good bit of cohesion, but some very good individual players now as well. So, so I don't know. I think it's impossible to call. I think you're looking at a couple at the moment. Tadhg Furlong's going to start at tight head for you. And I guess it depends on what happens with Farrell. You know, he's not in the form of his life, you know. But Robbie Henshaw is playing very, very well. And is he one of the best 12s in the Six Nations at the moment? Best form? No doubt. So... Mm. Yeah, there's two to start you off with at the moment.
Well, every time I look at Alan Wynne-Jones at the moment, I think, geez, this fella, he's going to hang on. Is it Wynne-Jones and Itoje at the moment?
Again, it's each week, you know. The thing about James Ryan is he you look at his stats and he gets through a mountain of work, but yet he's not a very impressive ball carrier. He gets his hands dirty, he does all the small, close quarters, collision winning. But yet you don't see him, like, he's not a power athlete like Ryan Baird, where he's going to have a big bullocking kind of 10 meter run and he's going to be throwing offloads. He doesn't have that same level of athleticism, but yet every team needs that guy. So just on the performances so far, we obviously missed the French game, but he was only around for 20 minutes of the Welsh game. I thought he played well at the weekend, but again, you'll see what comes in the next couple of games. And Itoje, obviously, he gave away 5 penalties. Yeah. I think one or two of them looked a bit on the harsh side of things, but you want that edge and you want that physicality, particularly taking on South Africa. So I think Itoje plus one.
Okay. Well, look, I'm getting ahead of myself. I'm like 2.5 games in and it's a Lions tour, which is in massive danger anyway. So
I know.
Our rugby coverage is with thanks to Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish team, a team of us, everyone in. So to finish on Wales 40, England 24. Triple crown in the bag. The likes of Jonathan Davies back and Liam Williams and Josh Adams, and they're suddenly looking full of confidence for obvious reasons. Pascal Gauthier, the referee. So we don't need to overly slate him because he's admitted the mistakes. I think this is good. I think this is a smart thing to do rather than let it linger. He's spoken to the head of referees at World Rugby, who has then come out and conceded there were two, they call them unfortunate incidents, and they don't see the point in letting it drag on and everybody having to debate was it a knock on, because it sort of went back even though it was so obviously a knock on. So that's probably the best way to handle a complete mess. I mean, for the stature of game to have those decisions, TMO included, was hard to fathom.
Do you know what? I guess what, you know, people will say, oh, well, you know, they won by 16 in the end. That's irrelevant, yeah, because these games are about momentum and about, you know, cat and mouse and who can build scores and who can generate confidence on the back of their first 20 minutes, 30 and first half and so on. So they were major issues. You know, I saw someone, John Smith commented on something about the same circumstances in 2005, you know, where he was told to go in Lansdowne Road. He was told to go and talk to his team. It was almost identical, except Rog tapped and went himself and went in the corner. And you would feel very, very hard done by. Mm. Obviously, we didn't feel it was the worst in the world then. When you're on a neutral side, it does feel a bit on the unfair side of things. And I saw Nigel Owens making some comments about it, how, you know, he shouldn't, Gauthier's error was not allowing the time to go back on. Dan Biggar did nothing wrong because he asked, has the time gone back on? And it had, whereas he should have allowed England to line out as you would suggest they would to defend something like that and then get the clock back on. And if they haven't done it with enough wit, well, that's on them. But it did seem a bit rash, and I could understand why, you know, there was a very irate Owen Farrell.
Yeah, and the water carriers were still on, is a point a few people made as well.
Yeah, I don't know what the actual ruling on that is from a technical point of view, but the issue was that the time went back on, and once time goes back on, you're allowed play.
Yeah,
and a beautiful, by the way, it was a great pinpoint kick as well, and Josh Adams even was clever enough to get up in the air right on the line. They did all the right things there. That was a relatively difficult one for them to take. The second one, all the more so, I think. You know, I don't know. I think there was a small bit of debate on one of the WhatsApps that I'm on as to, you know, the ball travel backwards. But my understanding had always been that if you don't control the ball as it goes forward, if you don't get control back of it, it's a knock on. It's like the time that you catch it and it falls to your feet and you hack it on. Without actually controlling it, that's still a knock on. Just because you've managed to get it to your foot and you've kicked it doesn't excuse what's happened previously. So he got that very wrong. Wasn't helped by his TMO as well. There was a couple of the minutes, let's not point all the finger of blame at Gauthier.
God, it's hard to believe though, you know, like I said,
it's just on crucial games like that. Oh. With so much at stake, it seemed like a bit of a schoolboy mistake that you just don't anticipate with world-class referees. Mm. So, I think you've got to feel sympathetic for him because we all do make errors. But when you do it in such high-profile games, you've got to take the flack that comes with it. You know, players take flack for their performances. I think the referee has to have a willingness to hold his hands up and say, I got that wrong too, which they've done. Credit to them, credit to him. And I think we've got to be able to park it as more difficult from an English perspective, but that's the reality of life.
There were six Saracens starters for England. Their fitness has been a discussion point, obviously. Where are they? What's going on here? Is this blip? Is this just one of the stodgy year they're having or something more serious?
It's difficult to get any, you know, they're not playing any games, right? So it's very difficult, no matter what level of intensity they have, no matter what bike sessions they're doing, no matter what level of game simulation they're doing in camp or at Saracens training. If you don't, you know, getting hit, the physicality, the intensity of high level games, club games or international games, you cannot find that in any form of training. It's just, we know about the match fitness, and they looked as though they were carrying. Billy Vunipola was very honest about it last week in the Times, talking about he realized his performance had been pretty ordinary. He's right. They have been. He looks as though he's carrying an extra bit of timber. But, you know, in some ways, you can't blame them because they've not had the game time opportunity that others have. And it usually takes 3, 4, 5 games in a season for players to probably get in and get their match fitness and get that match hardness. And they haven't had been given that luxury. So it's interesting that Eddie Jones continued to go to them, you know, that he didn't try others. And he's under a bit of pressure now with not picking informed players, but picking on reputation. So it'd be interesting to see what he goes to in game four.
Yeah. And then, of course, I mean, if it takes 4 to 5 games, they're right on schedule for Dublin. So that gets interesting.
Yeah, and well, it's not inconceivable that, you know, you could have both teams with 1 victory, you know, going into the final round. You know, England have France in Twickenham, and, you know, we've got a very difficult game over in Murrayfield. So it would add to a kind of a desperation, a necessity to win the final game and finish on a high. But there's always plenty of spark. From our perspective, it's the game that captures the public's imagination. From a player's perspective, there isn't the same animosity towards England like there is in the rest of the country. It's a respect that they're one of the best teams around, the World Cup finalists. So you want to beat the best teams. You always know anytime you've beaten England that you've had to slug it out. There's never an easy win against England, never. Mm. So you know, with all of those things, you know, culminating for the last weekend, it'll be a great game, even if there isn't a lot at stake, because desperation makes teams do great things and some terrible things sometimes.
And one last one in England. I've been listening to lots of English-based podcasts over the last couple of weeks, rugby podcasts, and they're talking. I mean, it's eerily similar to Ireland 2019 talk. Actually, it's you know, overprescribed, too much kicking, no plan B. All of these kind of stuff has been thrown out. Is that fair? Is that about where they are?
Yeah, I think it is. I think they are kicking an awful lot. You know, you think about when they were brilliant in the World Cup, and not just the New Zealand game, even against Australia, their moments, it feels like they're not giving their back three the same opportunities. I think they are missing Manu Tuilagi. I feel as though he's such a huge player for them. When you have someone that can guarantee you advantage line and get your BC pack around the corner, it certainly makes the game a hell of a lot easier. But even the likes of Johnny Mayes not hit the same form, Anthony Watson, Elliot Daly, I think, looks a shadow of his former self. So these guys, you know, the likes of Daly just needs game time to be able to play his way back into some form. He's still a great operator. He just needs a better run at it. But maybe it's time to try, you know, the likes of Max Malins in there, who's been very good for Bristol. And I think this is a chance for Freddie to change things up and pick on some form because it hasn't worked for him thus far. But he's a stubborn guy. Eddie won't do what anyone else wants him to do. And usually he comes out after games and says, "Oh, I didn't have them prepared, you know, as per usual." That's his usual line. He didn't even come out with that this time round. So as much as he's trying to not berate them in the press, I'd imagine they're going to get a hard time of it this week in Pennyhill Park or wherever their camp is, because their penalty count was unacceptable. And, you know, there's one thing playing on the edge, but giving away that many, that much access for a team into a game through penalties and you know, 50 metres down the touchline, it's very, very hard to win any game against a team that's hungry.
Yeah, 14 penalties in all. Finally, remiss of us maybe not to mention Billy Holland, 35 years of age now, 14 years at Munster, 241 appearances, and he's announced he'll retire at the end of the season. Strikes me, only from afar, of course, but strikes me as, you know, one of these heartbeat of the club type players, invaluable, I'd say, and just probably much loved amongst his teammates as well, this kind of fella.
Yeah, like if you think about, well, he's, you know, surpassed Ronan O'Gara's total as second most capped player, you know, to think about. You know, he obviously doesn't have that sort of reputation because he's a workhorse. He just churned it out for them time and time again. Wouldn't have always been a first choice selection, but he was someone that it felt as it appeared as though he he never had a bitterness when he wasn't selected, that he was just happy to be involved. And to play that number of games of rugby full stop, but to play them for one club, of course he's going to be a cult hero down there. He's kind of like a good overseas signing, just maybe below international level. I know he got capped, and maybe some people will say he's unfortunate not to get more tests, but probably just at that very good club level of player, but yet is always there for the November games when your internationals are gone. Again, you're in Six Nations, doesn't appear to be injured very often, and is clearly a popular guy. So phenomenal career for someone. And it does feel as though, yes, he was talented, but he really seemed to get everything out of his ability as well, and deliver for his beloved Munster.
Yeah, I'll try and speak to him in the next couple of days, I'm sure. Interesting couple of weeks ahead. Thanks so much.
Cheers, Joe.
Brian O'Driscoll on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.